Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. For more information, check out our website at WOSU.org. For more than a decade, algal blooms have invaded Ohio's lakes and rivers, turning waterways into a thick green mush, killing fish, and leaving the water toxic to humans. Experts say the primary cause of the pollution is runoff from farm fields, and researchers predict another bad year. Governor Kasich signed an executive order earlier this month to regulate the runoff, but a commission largely appointed by the governor sidelined the changes after farmers and GOP lawmakers raised red flags. Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter and producer Andy Chow has been covering the issue. He joins us now. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
The cause of the pollution is nothing new. We've known about what the farm runoff from fertilizers and livestock manure is doing. Mm-hmm. When did it become an issue?
I think the tipping point was really a few years ago when Toledo lost its drinking water because of this contamination out of the western Lake Erie Basin. At that point, it made international headlines. I mean, I remember I was actually on vacation in Europe and I was reading about it. And the fact that so many people lost access to their drinking water because of these
500,000 people.
Right. Because of these harmful algal blooms. That was the tipping point that made everybody stand up and recognize that they needed to take this issue on.
That was in 2014. Mm-hmm. How has the state responded since then?
So I would say the best way to sum it up is that they have passed several bills here and there to fund certain efforts to clean up some sort of contamination, but not a lot of funding has gone into preventing it from happening in the first place. One of the biggest things that they did was pass a bill to try to create standards around managing farmers' nutrients. So it's called nutrient management plans. And so what that is making sure that farmers understand or have a plan of how much fertilizer they put on their farm, how much manure is going on to their farm, storing the manure to make sure it doesn't run off into the waterways. Those were all more along the lines of voluntary efforts, nothing regulatory, nothing to really enforce that on farmers. And so that's kind of where we are today with Governor John Kasich's executive order, is really putting more teeth behind it and really creating regulations on that.
I want to get to that executive order, which hasn't gone anywhere,
right.
Which kind of makes it not an executive order. But in any event, I want to get to what that would have done. But in the meantime, as far as all those, you know, suggestions that the Ohio General Assembly has passed without any enforcement, without any teeth, is there any way to measure if those have been successful in any way?
So if you ask Craig Butler, he's the director of the Ohio EPA, he says that there have been measurable differences, that you have seen a decline in the amount of toxins that are making their way into the Lake Erie waterways. So they've said you can even see, like, in the measurements in the different HAB, harmful algal bloom forecasts, that there is a decline, but it's not steady enough. It's not enough to reach the sort of pace that the Kasich administration wants and that several environmental groups want.
So the executive order was supposed to help decrease the levels of nutrients flowing from farmlands. What would it have done?
So it would have declared, I think it's eight Lake Erie waterways as watersheds in distress. And that would all of a sudden trigger certain rules that are in place for people who farm within watersheds in distress. And again, that goes back to really creating tougher regulations on nutrient management plans, making sure you have a way to store your manure, making sure that you're only applying fertilizer at the right place at the right time in the right conditions. That would have set those in order, and then I believe it's the Ohio Department of Agriculture would have created additional rules on top of that to also be implemented.
So the eight watersheds in distress, how were those decided? How were those defined?
You know, I think he was focusing on the Western Basin. Again, that's the area that was contaminated in 2014, leaving a lot of people without their drinking water. And so those are mostly in that.
So the watersheds that feed the Western Basin of Lake Erie.
Correct.
Gotcha.
And so that's more of the Northwest territory of Ohio. I believe it's 2 million acres of farmland, and it can impact up to about 7,000 farms. Farmers.
All right. So this was an executive order. Mm-hmm. It went to a commission that he had appointed in the first place.
Right.
They said thanks, but no thanks. What happened?
So there is a lot of drama leading up to this. It's called the Ohio Soil and Water Commission. There's a lot of drama leading up to it. So Kasich signed the executive order. Then a few days later, a couple of farming groups got together with Republican lawmakers saying, these regulations are happening too fast, too strong. We need to slow down. We need to listen more to the farmers and hear their input before we implement these regulations. So there is a sort of this grassroots effort to stop these regulations before that commission met. And the day that commission met, they basically sided with the farmers, saying that we need to hear more input. We need to send these suggestions, send these recommendations to a subcommittee. So in the end, the vote, essentially the vote to pass Kasich's executive order, was stalled.
Why does he need the commission to approve it if it's an executive order? Can't he just order it?
Well, if you ask the General Assembly and if you ask Kasich's administration, they say this is what the process is supposed to be about. It's supposed to take politics out of it, and the commission is sort of created so it's not just the lawmakers or Governor Kasich making unilateral decisions, that it goes through this commission to make sure that enough time and effort is spent on these sort of things.
How did he come up? I mean, where did those recommendations or the recommended executive order come from? The Department of Agriculture?
Department of Agriculture, ODNR, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources was involved, and Craig Butler with the Ohio EPA. Those three agencies have been working together for a while.
And did they not get farmer input on those?
Well, it depends on who you ask. They would tell you that, I mean, they've spent years talking about this issue.
Yeah.
So they would say, well, you know, through all of these committee hearings in the House and the Senate, all these interested party meetings on the issue, they say, of course we've heard from farmers. But the farmers, especially the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, has said on this particular issue, on the executive order that was announced, they felt like they were shut out of the process.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're at the Ohio State Fair. That was the Ohio State Fair band in the distance, sharing their at least their drum corps talents with us. If you have a question or comment for my guest Andy Chow about rules and regulations in place to control farm runoff in order to control harmful algal blooms in Lake Erie and other lakes as well throughout the state of Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to hear from the chair of the Board of Trustees for the Nature Conservancy in Ohio, a water expert, and also we'll hear from the Ohio Farmers Union as well. What are farmers saying about this issue?
Well, I mean, it depends on who you ask. What the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation has said is that, again, they want more input into this. They say that these are the types of things that you don't have to mandate, that farmers are going to want to do this in the first place, and they have been wanting to do it. The Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, it should be noted, they've been encouraging farmers to create these nutrient management plans from the beginning. I think what they don't like is this idea of government overregulation, where they're being told to do these things.
Right. Well, is it just a philosophical difference about the reach of government, or is there some kind of scientific basis for their belief that they shouldn't be doing it or don't have to?
I think it's a little bit of half and half. I think that there are a lot of farmers out there who say, yes, we understand this is a problem and something needs to be done about it, but I believe if you ask a lot of people, I think they'll say that, but each of us want to go about it in a different way. So, for example, Representative Brian Hill, he's the chair of the Ohio Agriculture Committee.
He was in the House.
And he was saying that one of the proposals that was floating out there was this idea of really mandating by a calendar date when to put nutrients on your field, when to put fertilizer on your field.
Uh-huh.
But he said farmers shouldn't be working with such a strict constraints, because you never know. If it says, you know, December 6th, you can't do it, but what if December 6th is a nice day?
It's a perfect day to do it. Yeah.
Right. So he's saying those are the types of things where you can't constrain farmers like that, because they have to – there are ebb and flows to agriculture. Hmm.
So their obstacles are the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other obstacles for the farmers?
Weather's the biggest one. The one thing that has been put into place by the legislature and that the farmers were basically on board on is the idea of you cannot apply fertilizer on frozen ground and on rain-saturated ground.
Uh-huh.
And so those are some of the conditions that they talk about a lot. Why would you put fertilizer, why would you put nutrients on your field if it's not going to be productive for your crop in the first place? And again, that kind of goes back to the farmers aren't going to do what's wrong for their crop
anyway.
So that's the fight that's been happening between the Ohio government and farmers for a while.
Are farmers concerned that it's going to affect the output of their crops and their livestock?
I don't know if they would be concerned about exactly their livestock and their output, but they are concerned about the money that goes into this, because you have to spend, from what the farmers are saying, you have to spend a lot of money just to get a nutrient management plan, just to be able to spend the time on creating these plans and putting something in place. So, for example, another thing is storing manure. So does somebody have to put a ton of money into storing, into creating a facility to store manure? That would be one of their arguments. So in that turn, that they're afraid that it'll hurt their output in that way.
Drainage issues. That's mm-hmm. another thing. I mean, they drain the Black Swamp to lay down these fields hundreds of years ago.
And I will also say, you know, you were talking about crop and output and production.
Yeah.
One of the options, or one of the things that farmers can do, are create what are called buffer zones, where you put up, basically you grow a lot of tall grass to be able to soak up the nutrients as the rain flow, as the runoff is coming off of the field. Mm-hmm. But if you do create these buffer zones, you're taking crop offline in order to do so. So that's been an issue that's been taking place for a while. And then there's been, the government's been considering creating some sort of incentive to do so. Maybe we give you a tax credit to sort of make up for the amount of crop that you're taking offline.
Right. I was going to ask if that's been discussed.
It's been discussed. I don't think it's gone anywhere at this point, but it's been one of those ideas.
You know, it's probably, if you compare it to 40 years ago, the Ohio General Assembly is much more peopled with rural roots mm-hmm. in Ohio. It's largely Republican, and that largely hail from rural areas. Is that playing a role in this?
I mean, the farming and agriculture is Ohio's number one industry.
Right.
So
is it $8 billion a year or
right.
something? Right.
And so they have a huge pool no matter what. I will say the interesting thing about this conversation is that nobody's disagreeing with the fact that there is a problem and that something needs to be done. It's just how to go about it. Kind of going back to your point about, is this about government philosophical differences? The other thing here is that they say that the farmers know what they're doing and that they've been trying to put something into place.
What about other states? Are there any templates out there?
That's a good question. I think that Ohio, people are actually looking at Ohio because so much of the border runs up to Lake Erie,
yeah.
And Lake Erie is such a vital part of the Great Lakes. So I think Ohio's sort of not leading the way, but that people are looking at Ohio as what are they going to do as far as managing this, and other people might take the lead. But Ohio has a huge agriculture industry and a big waterway into Lake Erie.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what would be comparable,
yeah.
And what jumps to mind immediately is Wisconsin.
Right. And no, I haven't heard what Wisconsin's done, but I think that the issue's been focused on Ohio at this point. But you're right. And, you know, Wisconsin has a bunch of dairy cows and you know, that creates a manure problem too.
Also, so the panel, the commission that put the kibosh on the executive order to mm-hmm. Establish 8 watersheds in distress to trigger more regulations, That's over with now. What next from the Kasich administration? How has the governor responded to this?
Well, I think they're still wanting to let the process take place. That executive order now goes to a subcommittee of the Ohio Soil and Water Conservation Committee. So now that's going to go to a subcommittee. So we're talking about layers upon layers of government here. It's going to go to a subcommittee to hear more input from farmers, and then it'll likely come back to the commission. I think that at the end of the day, I think it's still possible that this will pass. It just will look better because it'll look like the commission gave farmers their day to talk about their issues with the problem. I will mention too that this Soil and Water Commission, it's made up of people that the governor has appointed, and if just a few days before that commission was supposed to meet, two people who were going to be no votes on the governor's executive order were not reappointed to the commission, and the governor appointed two new people. Those are the only two people who actually voted for his executive order.
So lots of politics along with the agricultural and pollution issues. Andy Chow, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Andy Chow of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. We've been talking about standards for farmers, livestock farmers, crop farmers, to address the issue of flow from fertilizers and livestock manure into the Lake Erie, western basin of Lake Erie. Remember 4 years ago, the algal bloom that formed there was so toxic, they had to shut down the water for 3 days in northwest Ohio. That was 500,000 people that went without water. We're going to hear from the former director of Ohio State's Ohio Sea Grant College program. He's also the chair of the Board of Trustees for the Nature Conservancy. And we're also going to hear from the president of the Ohio Farmers Union. So stay with us. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. By the way, we're at the Ohio State Fair today. Hope you can join us. It's a beautiful day. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. For more information, check out our website at WOSU.org. We're talking about the now familiar algal blooms that pollute Ohio waterways. The source is runoff from farm fertilizers and livestock manure. Joining us now is the former director of Ohio State's Ohio Sea Grant College program and chair of the Board of Trustees for the Nature Conservancy in Ohio, Dr. Jeffrey Reuter. Welcome to the show.
Thanks to be here.
I should say welcome back.
Yeah,
we've talked about this before, right?
We have, and it's always fun to come on your show, Ann.
Let's go to the last question I asked Andy Chow from Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, and that is, why Ohio? Why not Wisconsin? Why is this like it in Ohio?
Well, it's important to know Lake Erie is the southernmost, the shallowest, the warmest of the Great Lakes. The largest watershed in the Great Lakes, the largest tributary to the Great Lakes is the Maumee River in northwest Ohio. Drains 4 million acres of agricultural land, and the worst harmful alga blooms on the Great Lakes are on the Western Basin. If we look at nutrient loading from the 90 largest tributaries coming into the Great Lakes, the most phosphorus comes in out of the Maumee River. In 2008, the load from the Maumee was 3,800 tons. The next largest loader was the Sandusky River, also here in Ohio, 1,100 tons. You go over to the next largest loader after that, you jump over to Wisconsin, which was one of your discussions earlier,
at
the Fox River at Green Bay, 650 tons. So you compare the Maumee with 3,800 tons versus the Fox with 600. And often the load from the Maumee River and the Detroit River are about the same. We really, from a science standpoint, we don't think of the Detroit River as a river. It's a connecting channel between, you know, Lake Huron and Lake Erie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 30 times larger than the Maumee River. And to have the same amount of phosphorus coming in out of that river gives you an idea that the concentration of phosphorus in the water from the Maumee is 30 times higher than the Detroit.
Are Michigan farmers then culpable as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement is what started our focus on this, and it's what really allowed us to turn Lake Erie into the walleye capital of the world. So the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement was originally signed by Nixon and Trudeau in 72. It was modified in 78, 83, 87, and most recently in 2012. The 2012 modification has 10 different annexes, and one of the annexes focuses on nutrient loading. And I was the chair of that group of scientists from U.S. and Canada that really came up with our targets. So the 40% reduction that we talk about, or in the governor's...
That's a target.
It's a target. And it's based on that load from 2008. And the number in the governor's order recognizes an 860-ton target. Well, when you think about that, and let me also say that there have been a number of reports and scientific publications, most recently from Ohio EPA in 2016 and 2017, showing us that out of the Maumee River, about 88 to 89% of that phosphorus comes from agricultural runoff.
Yeah.
It took us a while to get to that point because you can imagine when...
You supposed it, but now you know it.
Well, we had other data that said it, but, you know, there, you can imagine the finger pointing. People would say, no, it's, you know, failing septic tanks or it's combined sewer overflows. And the bottom line is that failing septic tanks are about 4% of the load.
And then people just fertilizing their grass?
Less than 1% of the load. Yeah, and that's also important because I also chaired the loading committee from the Ohio Phosphorus Task Force, and as, that was the original group that came up with the 40% reduction, and we submitted our report in March of 2013, so more than 5 years ago, calling for this reduction. It's not new information. As part of that, on that task force, Scotts Miracle-Gro was on there.
Uh-huh.
Scotts Miracle-Gro looked at all this. They were doing a lot of science in the background. And bottom line is that if we look at our your standard four-step application of fertilizer on your own lawns, Scotts removed all fertilizer or all phosphorus starting January 1 of 2013 from their lawn care products except for their starter fertilizer. So since 2013, phosphorus is out of the lawn care products, and Scotts is big enough that about 95% of the market follows their move when they do it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about why farm runoff affects Lake Erie, sometimes hundreds of miles away. Mm-hmm. My guest right now is... Dr. Jeffrey Reuter, he's chair of the Board of Trustees for the Nature Conservancy in Ohio, former director of Ohio State's Ohio Sea Grant College Program. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Spencer, you're on the air. Hi, Spencer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So I was a reporter in Virginia a few years ago, and you were asking about analogs to the situation of maintaining or reducing runoff into our waterways. In the Chesapeake Bay watershed, they were found to be in violation of the Clean Water Act some years ago, and so the EPA has been working with states in that area to reduce their phosphorus and nutrient loads through a combination of best management practices. They basically set up a cap system where states are required to bring their loads down by a certain percentage each year, and the states are kind of empowered to work with the farmers directly to reduce the loads, which I think has worked pretty well because they have kind of a good cop, bad cop scenario where the federal government is the bad cop making them do it and the state government kind of steps in and helps them reduce those loads. But I thought that was an interesting analog to our situation, and I'm not sure why Ohio hasn't been required to kind of take the same approach or if the federal government has looked at stepping in. But that might be something we see down the road.
Yeah, that's a good question, Spencer. Thanks a lot. Jeff?
When I look at Ohio or U.S. EPA's role in this, and I mentioned Annex 4, the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement that came up with our targets, that was all led by U.S. EPA and their counterpart on the Canadian side, Environment and Climate Change Canada. So U.S. EPA has been very involved with this, but up until recently... allowing Ohio EPA to take the lead, and again,
the Chesapeake watershed,
unlike in the Chesapeake,
okay.
but even in the Chesapeake, US EPA required specific action. So recently, there was pretty much a requirement from US EPA for Ohio EPA to designate the Western Basin as impaired. While all of that was going on, Ohio EPA was really leading an effort with scientists in this area, coming up with a science-based understanding of what an impaired watershed means. And we're at that point now. So along with the designation of the Western Basin as being impaired, we have a science-based statement of here's what impaired means. And that's important because... if you simply designate something as impaired and then you start throwing money at it to improve it, how will you know when it's unimpaired?
Right. How do you measure success?
Exactly. You've got to have that science-based understanding of what impairment means. We have it. It's been designated as impaired. But that's really a case with US EPA and Ohio EPA working together on that.
What are the factors that go into what happened in 2014 when they became so bad that people couldn't drink the water in Northwest Ohio for 3 days?
Yeah.
And there's some people who still won't.
Exactly. And there's every year we're going to have some size of harmful algal bloom on the western basin of Lake Erie. Our target, our 40% reduction, that target is designed to come up with blooms that looked like the bloom of 2012, which was a very small bloom,
okay,
or smaller, 9 years out of 10. We know right now that the amount of phosphorus coming in, and we've known this since the 70s, is what determines the size of the bloom. We also have learned recently that it's not the amount that comes in over the whole course of a year,
okay,
but it's the amount that comes in out of the Maumee River from March 1st until July 31st. So
summer.
It's that five-month period
of time.
Spring
and summer, yeah.
Spring, yeah. That determines how bad the bloom's going to be. We've seen the five worst blooms on Lake Erie ever since 2011, so things are not getting better. And there's a very tight line relationship. The amount of the discharge out of the Maumee or how much rain we get and the amount of phosphorus that comes in, it's a very tight line.
The more rain, the more that it
exactly.
more flows in, right.
So what we have to do when we set our target of, say, the 860 tons, we also said that the way you track your progress is not by measuring the load, but by measuring the average concentration of phosphorus in that water. So if you have a drought year like 2012, which followed a very wet spring in 2011, what you see, well, one thing, people will say it'll take a long time to achieve success. Well, that's absolutely wrong. Nature has shown us that when you reduce the amount of phosphorus that comes into the western basin, the blooms go away immediately.
A drought's a good thing.
A drought's a good thing.
For the bloom.
For the bloom. Yeah. What we have to do is work with farmers, and we've done this and are continuing to do it, and can show them here's what you need to do in order to reduce the amount of phosphorus that comes off the field when it rains. Because that's the only way. Right now, we're seeing essentially the same amount every year. When it rains, you get the same amount of phosphorus coming off, and we need to change that. And the four most important things for farmers to do, don't put more phosphorus on their field than you need for maximum crop production. When you put it on, don't do a broadcast application, lay it at the surface. Instead of doing that, insert it into the soil down 3 to 5 inches. Manage your erosion, and the last thing is in some way manage the water. We call it drainage water management. We'd like to have less water leave the field, and farmers can do that by improving soil health, getting more carbon into the soil. So 2014, we had a relatively small bloom that year. It wasn't giant. 2015 was much bigger. 2011 was much bigger.
Okay.
These blooms, this algae and Microcystis, tends to float. Well, if you get a strong northeast wind, that tends to blow the bloom down toward Toledo. So it concentrates right at the Toledo water intake. It also creates wave action, which mixes the bloom from the surface down to the water intakes. Bottom line is that particular bloom was very toxic. And the toxicity of these blooms varies depending on how much nitrogen is in the water. Turns out that the toxins that the algae produce are 14% nitrogen by weight. So if you have the phosphorus tells you how much algae you're going to get. Nitrogen tells you how toxic that bloom is going to be. We had both things happen in 2014, plus we had weather events that blew the bloom right over top of the water intake, mm-hmm. and simply the bloom got sucked into the water plant before the plant was ready to treat it. Done a lot of research on how water treatment plants can remove the toxins. They can do it successfully with charcoal, activated carbon, a couple other techniques. Those are the most common two right there. And the plants are pretty much set up to do that now. But we're still concerned because these toxins often attack the liver. And when we look around the country, and almost all 50 states now, I think, have problems with this, we see an elevated level of liver cancer everywhere where we see harmful algal blooms.
Mm. Let me ask you, so the amount of rain will determine how much of this stuff has gotten into the watershed and then into the Western Basin. Is there any dilution function in all of that? So the more rain, does it dilute it at all? Or could it?
That's a great question, and it's
Does it offset, I guess, is what I'm asking.
We often do a comparison between the Maumee River and the Cuyahoga River.
Okay.
The Cuyahoga River at Cleveland is an urban tributary.
Okay.
So people are concerned about combined sewer overflows and runoff from parking lots and lawn care. What you see in every urban tributary we look at, when you get a big storm, the amount of phosphorus going in goes up, but the concentration goes down.
Okay.
When you look at an agriculture tributary like the Maumee, you get a big storm event, the amount of the loading, the volume of phosphorus goes up, and the concentration goes up. Key point on that is when we look at the load out of the Maumee River, 80% of that load comes from the largest 10 rain events each spring.
Okay.
And so we really need to focus on the storms, because with agricultural runoff, that's when the load comes in.
Another question, climate change, does that have any role in this? Given the, particularly with Lake Erie, its shallowness, it's warmer. Is that going to be a function going forward?
Well, now you
add a factor,
I think. When you say going forward, bottom line is it's incredibly important. Because we've seen somewhere between a 37 and a 53% increase in the frequency of severe storms.
Yeah.
And remember, it's the severe storms, the storms that produce more than 2 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. You know, 2 days ago, we had 2 inches of rain in 1 hour up in the Westerville area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is very common, and it's becoming more common because of climate change. So that makes it challenging. Going forward, this simple answer, some of the phosphorus comes from phosphorus that's buried in the sediment in Lake Erie. It's been down there from agricultural runoff and sediment coming into the lake from farms field for many years. If the water temperature gets above 83 degrees, the amount of phosphorus that's released from the sediments greatly increases. And we're currently up into the 81 area. So if this gets much warmer, then the problem is going to really become worse, because we'll see more phosphorus released from bottom sediments.
The watershed that feeds into the western basin of Lake Erie includes eastern Indiana, does it not?
Yes.
Are they part of these conversations?
Absolutely. The task force, the science group that I led when we focused on this, 25 scientists, the largest watershed to the Great Lakes is the Maumee, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio. So when in 2015, Governor Kasich, the governor of Indiana, the governor of Michigan, and the premier of Ontario, all signed an order saying that we're going to hit the 40% reduction by 2025, and we're going to get a 20% reduction by 2020. In the governor's executive order, you look at the Maumee River. It's really a good science-based order because it focuses on the worst watersheds. Remember, our way of tracking progress is to look at the concentration of phosphorus. We call it the flow-weighted mean concentration of water. The watershed, the Maumee River basically runs from Toledo to Fort Wayne, Indiana. The watersheds to the north of that are very close to our target. The watersheds to the south of it, the ones that were mentioned in the executive order, are 2 to 3 times over the target. So that
those eight.
That executive order focuses on the worst places. If we're going to spend money to solve this problem, let's focus where it's the worst.
What about the issue of struggling to, you know, ideas about using calendars, you know, after the December 1st, you know this, know that, and December 1st, December 5th might be the perfect day to fertilize.
Yeah.
Things are changing a lot, for one thing. It's a lot more less predictable, but is that the best way?
The best way is really to focus on the amount that's applied. Don't apply more than you need. And that's we have to recognize, you know, when you say that to a farmer who's putting on commercial fertilizer, that's not a real heavy lift. But when you talk to a person who's applying manure, that could be a very heavy lift.
Why?
Typically, farmers in applying manure have been allowed to apply it about three times or more than is needed for maximum crop production. So you suddenly say, well, now you can no longer apply anything. If your soil test phosphorus tells you that you don't need any more, you can't apply it. So where are they going to go with that? So when we think about our solutions, what we really need to be thinking about is how do we help the farmer who's in that situation? How do we help him transport it farther? So are we going to subsidize this? Or, you know, we provide lots and lots of subsidies to agriculture. Maybe we need to reconsider where we're doing it. This, you know, is
why we're doing it.
But maybe make sure we're putting it where we get the biggest bang for the buck.
Okay.
And also, when we look at loading, NRCS, ag group, national ag group, came up and recognized that 78% of the phosphorus comes from 42% of the fields. That also tells you that probably 58% of the farmers are doing a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. That's a really important thing to keep in mind as we go forward. And when we look at the size of the farms, we look at farms less than 50 acres. Those farms represent 55% of the farms, but only 3% of the acres. Farms that are over 50 acres represent 45% of the farms and 97% of the acres. So maybe the smart move would be, let's focus only on the larger farms. We can leave a lot of these guys out of it, and we'd end up hitting, you know, 90% of it. I think we need to bring science into this discussion a lot more, because I think it would help us immensely.
Jeffrey Reuter, thank you so much for joining us today as it is. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Ann.
That's Dr. Jeffrey Reuter. He's chair of the Board of Trustees for the Nature Conservancy in Ohio. He's former director of Ohio State's Ohio Sea Grant Program. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Farmers Union, the Ohio Farmers Union. So stay with us and bring your questions, 614-292-8513. Join us here at the Ohio State Fair. WOSU is here most of the day. Join us and have some fun. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. For more information about what's going on down here with WOSU, check out the website at WOSU.org. We're talking about the connection between the farms where our food is grown and the pollution in our waterways. Lots of people remember the 2014 debacle in Lake Erie, where a huge algal bloom, actually wasn't as necessarily that big of an algal bloom, but it was blown in by weather into a bad place near the intake lines for Toledo Water, and it caused it shut down the water for 500,000 people in Northwest Ohio for 3 days. Earlier this month, the governor signed an executive order to help regulate agricultural runoff in 8 of the worst watershed areas. A panel appointed by the governor himself has sidelined the order, calling it instead for further study. Ohio Farmers Union President Joe Logan released a press release opposing the executive order, stating that while the order was, quote, well-intended, the possible implications for farmers could be extreme. Joe Logan joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
All right. You said the governor's executive order was well-intended. It was put together by ODNR, Department of Agriculture, the Ohio Department of EPA. What did you mean by that, and where did it go wrong?
Well, I think this is an absolutely necessary action that needs to be taken. We can't sit here and watch these harmful algae blooms percolate up in Grand Lake St. Mary's or Western Lake Erie without taking some action. We know we're believers in science. We know that agriculture is a prime source of these things. So we know that farmers need to be involved in the solution. There is an opportunity to have some negative impacts for farmers. We know that. We acknowledge that. And frankly, we were less concerned about the downsides of this than most of the rest of the ag commodity groups. And our concerns were mostly that requiring farmers to adopt a manure or a nutrient management plan is not the end of the rainbow. There is a lot of other things that need to happen. We need to have fairly objective standards and criteria that farmers need to follow. I think most farmers are doing that already, but I think we need to bring everybody on board. The 80-20 rule is probably in effect like it is for most other things, that 80% of the problem comes from a smaller portion of the farms.
Right. Yeah, as my previous guest said, most farmers, a majority of farmers, are doing things right. But
absolutely.
The point, there's more factors involved than just what a farmer is doing. There's weather.
Absolutely.
There's climate change. There are just the vagaries of how the runoff occurs, whether it's occurring with manure, whether it's occurring with fertilizer. There's just a lot of factors.
Yeah. Well, as Jeff Reuter mentioned, climate change is a big deal, and it is the intense rainfalls that farmers are experiencing now and that everybody's experiencing absolutely come down and scour the surface of, of farmland and actually take up those nutrients and carry those into waterways. That being the case, we know that there is a very solid relationship between the application rate for nutrients, whether they be nutrients or whether they be manure or chemical
fertilizer. You mean how often it's applied?
No, how the amount at
the
which
amount.
It's applied.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There's a big connection between that and soil tests. If you exceed a certain amount of phosphorus in your soils, you're much more likely to have those soils relinquish that phosphorus during rainfall.
That's literally the makeup of the soil. It just can't absorb more than a certain amount. And
well,
it washes off.
It can't hold more than a certain
amount. Okay. Exactly. There's a difference, too, between fertilizers, commercially produced fertilizers, and manure for farmers. Some farmers rely on manure. They don't have as much control over that.
Well, I think the biggest problem with manure is that our agriculture, especially our livestock systems, has really consolidated over the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. And instead of a farmer needing 100 cows to support his family, he now needs 1,000 or something of that nature. And so what happens is that on livestock farms, those farms are aggregating nutrients far beyond their ability to responsibly distribute those in many cases. And we are a livestock industry now that is based upon kind of a CAFO system.
What does that mean?
Confined animal feeding operations.
Okay, gotcha.
In other words, the cows are not out grazing in the countryside. They're confined in a feedlot. You bring in the feed.
Factory farming.
You build a mountain of manure or a lagoon full of manure, and then at a certain point, you've got to get rid of it. And farmers are constricted by parameters. You know, they've got growing crops on their field most of the year. During the winter time, it's not really appropriate to do that. There are a lot of spring and fall times when the soils are too wet. So there are only certain times when they can get it out there, and when they move it out quickly, and they often may apply it more heavily than they should.
And Jeff Reuter made the point as well, the big farm operations, the big factory farms, whether it's livestock or feed or crops, they're the bigger part of the problem.
Absolutely. We know that the large livestock farms are accumulating manure in enormous quantities, and that is really a management challenge for them to get that distributed out there properly. Many times they have predicated their business model on externalizing the costs, and that may mean overapplying on fields that are nearby so they don't have to absorb the cost of moving it out.
Of storing it, moving it out. Corey on Twitter asks, what role can phosphorus removal structures in and along waterways that feed the Maumee River play?
Well, I think that there
are... What do we mean by phosphorus removal structures? It's some kind of
Yeah, I think what he's referring to is the so-called artificial wetland.
Okay, the buffer zones?
Well, right. Okay. That would function in that regard. Okay. As you probably know, we have already removed 90% of the wetlands that used to buffer Lake Erie and the watersheds. So we've got
the
a lot of work
Black
to do
Swamp.
There. Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
So building, can you build structures that can do this artificially?
You could. And, you know, there are a number of conservation programs over the years that have been designed to allow farmers to profitably replace some of their active cropland with conservation land. In fact, the University of Michigan said that we need to allocate at least 30,000 acres to this sort of conservation use, and that would help us really to meet this goal. Unfortunately, the Farm Bill has kind of chiseled away at programs that help to do that, and in fact, they've chiseled away at our overall conservation investments. And so we're not heading in the right direction in terms of policy.
The president's talking about $12 billion in subsidies for farmers affected by the tariff war that's going on with China right now. What about subsidies for compliance with rules and regulations regarding phosphorus and, you know, the overflow?
Well, we have long advocated a program that kind of blends together good management of our agricultural operations nationally. And that, you know, we used to manage the output of all crops, milk, corn, soybeans, whatever you're growing, by telling farmers that they could take 5% of their acres and set them aside to conservation uses. Then the farmers would, the government then would kind of guarantee a minimum price.
Okay.
We've done away with that program. And what has happened is that act is an incentive for farmers to plant every acre. And that just fuels the additional oversupply of corn, soybeans, wheat, hogs, whatever you're doing. And that's the situation we're in now. We have a dramatic oversupply, not only nationally, but globally, of virtually every agricultural commodity. That depresses prices, and a farmer that needs to pay off his mortgage and support himself needs to put on more cows or more acres or more pigs.
And meanwhile, back at the ranch, these tariffs have been put in place. What do you think about the $12 billion in subsidies that are being offered by the Trump administration?
Well, it's a Band-Aid on a gaping wound, which is our agricultural policy stance here in the United States. The president was famously accusing the nation of Canada of being terrible in terms of dairy subsidies and dairy quotas.
Right.
And frankly, if we want to bring our agricultural markets back into balance, we need to do exactly what the Canadians do. That's establish a quota.
Uh-huh.
And for the amount of product we produce, and put on export quotas so that we don't get infused by stuff coming in from Argentina or Brazil.
So much of the agriculture is dictated by time and circumstance. If the tariffs came down today, would it change what has already been put into motion for this season?
Well, we've learned some terrible lessons from history, and sometimes our global customers have long memories, and when we decide not to supply their markets, they remember that. That's true back for Jimmy Carter and Nixon as well. I'm afraid it's likely to be true for this president as well.
Joe Logan, president of the Ohio Farmers Union, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Mary Lee Williams, assistant producer Kyle McKinnon, All Sides interns Martin Coleman, Alexander Havolchik, Scott Good, and Ray Brewster, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. And Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks for joining us today. We're at WOSU is here for the rest of the day at the Ohio State Fair. So come on down, check out our website at WOSU.org to learn more about what's going on. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.